Hello, and welcome to the CWF Gamecast. This is episode 47, and I'm your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. You might notice that this is a little different than usual, and that's because my co-host and friend, Tom Barbalay, is not with us this time. His brother is visiting America for the very first time, so Tom has taken a little leave of absence to spend some time with his brother. He will be back soon, I promise you. In the meantime, you get the pleasure of my company, and I have the pleasure of yours. And today is a really special episode for us because we have one of the guest interviews that I've been looking forward to the most. It is with Bill Detmers. He is CEO and owner of 127games.com. They are our sponsor, so if they sound a little bit familiar, it's because we talk about them at the end of every episode, as we will again at the end of this one. But Bill and I are going to be chatting and talking about all sorts of stuff. We'll talk about 127 Games. We're going to talk about War at Sea. We talk a little bit about the Access and Allies Forum Mini. We actually introduced a brand new contest that's going up, so listen for that near the end of the show. I also want to alert you to the fact that Bill mistakenly gave an inaccurate phone number for his company. So if you need to get in touch with him, you will want to email him. The email address is correct. But if you'd rather give them a phone call, you can do so on the toll-free line. It is 877-787-9366. So when you hear Bill later on in our interview, he's going to give the phone number. Please note it's the incorrect phone number. You're going to want to call the number I just gave you instead. It is 877-787-9366. And again, that's a toll-free number, but you can reach them at the email address, contactus@12-7-games.com, or just go ahead to their website or go to our website, etc. So anyway, at this point, I'm going to cue our little interlude music, and then we'll get right on into the interview. So, for all the listeners, this is the second time on the CWF Gamecast, soon to be Monty and the Fox's Wargaming Show, where we've had a featured guest. And this time we're really excited because our guest today is Bill Detmers. He's the CEO of 127games.com. They sell all sorts of historical gaming stuff. In particular, they focus on War at Sea, which is something I love to play. And additionally, Bill and 127games.com is our sponsor. So, Bill, I just want to welcome you to the CWF Gamecast.
Well, thanks again for having me. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yes, this is the one interview I've been the most excited about, because I think what you're doing with 127 Games and your story of how you decided to start it up, tell us the story behind it.
All right. Well, about 2 years ago, let me just give you a little background first. I own another business in St. Louis, Missouri, where we design and administer retirement plans, 401ks, pensions, ESOPs. And we work with a company there in Boston by the name of John Hancock.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sure you've heard of them.
Oh, absolutely. I have quite a few friends who work there.
Well, okay. Well, their regional vice president in St. Louis and I had lunch one day, and he was talking about, as a kid, he played Axis and Allies. And I told him that I was a big Axis and Allies enthusiast, and I hadn't played the board game in years. And so I said, well, one of these days I'll have you over to play. But I said, it's been so long since I even played it, I'm not even sure if I got my old Axis and Allies board game anymore, because I bought it from my kids when they were young. So I started looking around, and I couldn't find it. And so I went on the Internet, and I started looking at eBay, and I found that there was a bunch of these old Axis and Allies games from the 80s that were, you know, listed out there for sale. And when I, you know, typed in Axis and Allies, not only did the board game come up, but all these miniatures. I said, well, what the heck are all these miniatures? Now, understand that I've been a war gamer since I was like 11, 12 years old, and that goes way back to 1960, 61. and so I've always been interested in war games, and so I saw these miniatures, and I started looking at them. I thought, well, you know what? That'd be a pretty nice thing to start collecting. So I started looking more and more, and I started buying a few on the Internet. And finally I decided, you know, rather than paying all these prices that I'm paying for my collection, I decided I was going to collect them all. I'm just going to go into the business so I can buy them wholesale and then sell what I don't want retail. And so about I guess I formed my company December the 27th, 2009, 127 Games. It's an LLC. It's created in St. Louis over in Missouri. And started acquiring, I got a wholesaler who would, you know, work with me and sell to me. I guess maybe you guys maybe heard of Southern Hobby, but they're a distributor that works with a lot of different gaming companies. And so we started purchasing our stock and stuff from them. Then my brother is a programmer analyst. And so he started helping me develop a website on an independent platform. And I guess we launched the store. It was sometime in April. And we then, in the meantime, between December and April, I learned about the 4U Mini. And so I had communicated with Aaron Filter, which is one of the moderators on the 4U Mini. In fact, I bought some stuff from him on eBay, and that's how I became connected with Aaron. And he suggested perhaps I look into becoming a sponsor on the 4U Mini. And a Neural Dream was kind enough to allow me to come on as one of the sponsors. And I guess that was April the 22nd or something like that of 2010. And so that, you know, pretty much is the story about how 127 Games started. It was just, I'm a collector. I'm interested in collecting. And I decided that rather than buying these things individually, I was just going to buy them wholesale and then sell the stuff that I didn't need for my collection. And today, you know, we're one of the largest internet distributors of Axis and Allies and War at Sea miniatures in the world. We've got customers. In fact, I sent out a couple of orders this week to South Korea, Japan, Italy, obviously the UK, but just about every European country we've shipped to. And it's been a rewarding job for me. I operate the business out of my house, although I do have a business location over in St. Louis where we do, you know, our regular business. The actual warehousing of the miniatures are here at my house.
Oh, wow. And, take up a lot of room.
Well, thank goodness my wife and I built a very large house about 6 years ago, 5.5, 6 years ago, and we have a lot of storage space. And so I put up some heavy-duty steel shelving in my house. We've got a storage area over my garage that probably has, close to 1,000 cases of Axis and Allies and War at Sea miniatures in it. Ooh. And then I have about 500 or 600 storage area in my basement where I keep all my individual miniatures, and that's where I'm speaking to you from right now. I'm looking at... I've got a couple of cases. Let me see, there's Condition Zebra that stared me right in the face, and I've got all kinds of boosters. Every one of the boosters from the Axis to Allies base set all the way up through Condition Zebra, and I have all the boosters, the loose boosters, the unboxed boosters for the War at Sea series. And then behind me on some very big shelves, I have... all the different sets boxed up with the individual miniatures in them. And there's probably just in this room right here, individual loose singles. There's probably close to 20,000 Axis and Allies and War at Sea miniatures in this room right here.
Wow. That's a lot of minis.
It's probably the largest group of miniatures at War at Sea and Axis and Allies miniatures in the world, right here where I'm sitting.
I think there's many a gamer who would be envious of you sitting there with all that around you.
Yeah, I'm sure there are. I have some guys that come over and play once a month with me, and I have a pool table that I can convert to a tabletop. And in fact, we had we posted on the 4U Mini the game that we had earlier this month on the the 15th when I had Tish here and Larry Scott and another player. What's his 4U Mini name? I can't remember what it is. Panzer something or other. But When I brought them in here, they just kind of, you know, their jaw dropped when they saw all these boxes with these loose singles miniatures sitting in here. It's, I don't know, I guess it's kind of impressive for a war gamer. My wife doesn't think too much of it, but I'm sure war gamers would just die to have these, as you said.
And I've heard a little bit about your WurtC gaming sessions before. They've kind of become legendary online. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about them, like how they came about? And, like, I don't know, do you tend to play scenarios, or do you just, like, how do you formulate them? And
I'm not sure legendary is the right word. WurtC is my favorite game. I like WurtC better than Axis and Allies, although I do play both every month. The WurtC game that we had here a couple of weeks ago that we posted online with the 40 Mini was a team set where two of us took the Axis and the other two guys were the Allies. We each played country-specific rules. In other words, if you've got an SA, it's applicable only to your particular country's units, not your partner's units. So it was a 500-point side game. It was it lasted about 5.5 hours. It was a lot of fun. It was probably the best time I've had in a long, long time. But it was not a scenario. It was just, each side developed their own strategy. Tish and I were the Axis. He's from Germany, and he is a biologist, teaches at a university in Missouri. And he brought his Axis or his German fleet with him, and then I had the Japanese fleet. And then Larry Scott and his partner, they were the Allies. Larry was the British, and his friend, I'm not going to give you his name, but he's a doctor, mm-hmm. and he was the United States. And they had developed their own game plan, thinking that we were going to have a long lance torpedo build, when in fact, I brought 12 Georges.
Oh, wow.
And it really, they weren't ready for it. They didn't expect it at all. Because their build was very well put together for a long lance torpedo swarm. But we didn't go that route at all. In fact, we went with three very good battleship groups to compete for each of the three objectives.
Mm-hmm.
Tish had the Gneisenau and the Tirpitz, each in their own separate group with support ships, and I had the Musashi with its support ships. And because we were using the long-range rules, we decided not to use any aircraft carriers and attack on their side of the map, because we felt that the U.S. Air Force was going to be far too superior, and if we were going to be flying our planes over to their half of the map, there was a 1 or 2 turn turnaround time for rearming. And so what we decided, because we had such a strong battleship contingent there for in to challenge for each of the three objectives, that we'd be better just to play defense using our strong Georges to combat their U.S. Air Force, and it worked like a charm. The three battleship fleets that we had did exactly what we expect them to do, and the Georges, even though you had to put a rearming counter on them, because we were playing the long-range rules,
mm-hmm.
The U.S. Air Force, even though they were a carrier base, had to have one rearming put on each of their their airplanes. So we were able to turn our Georges around as fast as they were able to turn around their attack bombers and their fighters. So we played defense and fought it out at the objective, and we ended up winning.
Well, that's very good.
It was kind of interesting because typically whenever you're up against the U.S. Carrier fleet with a strong air contingent, you're usually going to have a hard time winning, but we came out on top on that combat.
Just for those listeners who may not understand what WurtC is, it's a game put out by Wizards of the Coast. It's a naval miniatures game focusing on World War II. All of the models are actually very well crafted, or at least now they are anyway, plastic models. And they've done a wonderful job with the aircraft and trying to be as historically accurate as possible. Of course, there's some errors out there, but one of, I guess it's kind of maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of like an inside word sea joke that, like, anyone who plays, you want to win, you're going to either play as the Americans because they have, like, this power creep built in, or if you're playing as the Japanese, you're most likely going to play as or face them with a torpedo swarm because of those long lances that they'll do a lot of cruisers and destroyers and just kind of overwhelm you that way. So it's interesting that you guys took that and then just kind of turned it on its head and did the opposite, because most people don't do that. And I think it's, you can win doing it, but if you do it all the time, or if people know that it's a common practice, you're very likely to be found out. And
that's right. And most people don't have 12 Georges.
No, that's true, too.
And so that's where the surprise was. They didn't really expect 12 Georges. And to be honest with you, you know, if I had been them, I wouldn't have expected 12 Georges either. But that was what the turning point in the game was, the 12 Georges, and deciding not to use aircraft other than the 12 Georges at our land base, and no aircraft carriers. Well, I shouldn't say we had no aircraft carriers. Tish had an aircraft carrier with two ME-109s on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Japanese fielded no aircraft carriers whatsoever.
Yeah, that could be unusual, but it definitely worked in your favor.
Definitely. I think if we would have, in fact, Tish and I talked about, you know, we wanted to throw them a curveball. We didn't want to go with anything that, you know, conventional wisdom would dictate. So we thought about it. I mean, Tish and I really, really planned our strategy. I think we had probably eight to 10 different restructurings of our fleets. And we must have had, we talked two or three times, but we had emails going back and forth about possible builds and changes. We must have had 20 or 30 emails going back and forth about changes to our fleets. And finally it evolved to where, you know, we went with the land-based aircraft and the big, strong battleships to contend for the objectives.
For those who don't know, the George is a fantastic unit to use. It's only 11 points, which isn't actually that bad for a fighter considering what it does. It has armor 7, I think it's vital 9 or vital 8 maybe.
Yeah.
One hull point, but it has AA 9, so that's pretty handy. You have the 3 attacks with the machine guns if you're going to strafe, which I think is pretty standard. But then it comes with, of course, escort, which most fighters have. As you said, it's land-based. But then it's an advanced fighter, which this is one of those special abilities I've always liked, because having the ability to roll those extra dice when you're doing your AA against those fighters, it can be pretty huge. I mean, you have to hit with it, of course, but 2 extra dice anytime is always I would call it a blessing.
Well, that was the reason why we had to go with the George. When we thought about, you know, what we were going to be facing, you're going to be facing either the Hellcats on the carriers, which mm-hmm. is what we expected, and is what we saw also. We also saw the Avengers, which we expected. We were also expecting Corsairs, and we didn't face any of those. But the Corsairs and the Hellcats are also the advanced fighters, too. And we were just concerned that if we were to try to attack with zeros, we wouldn't be in the game very long at all. And I think that was the right decision, to go with land-based aircraft, the advanced fighters, the Georges, and not prepare or put out there a carrier fleet that would have been, you know, easy hay for those guys to make some easy points with. So that's why we went that route.
Now, with War at Sea, you said that it's your favorite game to play, that you like it even better than Axis and Allies. Do you have, like, a certain set that you like, or maybe a unit, or, like, a build type, maybe a nation, or, like, one thing that you seem to gravitate towards?
I love the Japanese. I don't know why. Maybe it's just the underdog. Mm-hmm. I've always been interested in the Japanese. Even as a kid, when I got interested in playing some war games, I always wanted to play the Japanese. I guess my favorite ship is the Akagi. I always have liked World War II carrier battles. And so I'd say, yeah, the Akagi is probably my favorite. And I haven't played a game yet that was a Ward C game yet that was limited by year. Everything has been pretty much wide open. Most players don't have a big enough collection to do a good battle, you know, limited to 1941 or 1942, so you need to expand it to where you can use any year. There are no year limitations.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I would really like to do a 1941 U.S. versus Imperial Japanese Navy carrier battle. That's what I would really like to do.
This was a few years back, but there's a group of people who I play with. We play almost every Wednesday night. It's a historical gaming kind of group. And for a long time, we were really into War at Sea. And right now, we're kind of going back and forth between that and Flames of War. But we did this scenario where it was our version of Midway, actually. But some reason, we ended up transplanting it to the Caribbean. And I can't remember what it is. There's actually a video of this up on our YouTube channel. But when we were doing it, we were trying to keep it specific or as close as possible to the year for Midway. And this was when they only had a few sets out, and we found it to be really difficult to adhere to that year limitation. I think it's interesting that you can try to adhere to the year limitation because that they have that built in, you know, into the rules. But at the same time, as you said, there's just not enough stuff that most people tend to have in order to do it. You'd have to buy like case after case after case in order to potentially get something like that.
Yeah, that's the reason why you just have to, you know, be flexible and play without any year limitation. But you can play online, and you know, you don't have the restrictions there of having to own it. But I kind of like to hold those little plastic ships in my hand.
Yeah, oh, I'm with you. I think I have maybe, well, I don't have anywhere near as many as you do, but I have maybe like 500 or 600 of the, you know, the little models floating around all over the place. And I've had to slow down my purchasing over the time. I think for the first set, I got something like 6.5 or 7 cases worth of models. And it's progressively gotten less. So like Task Force was maybe like 5 cases, and Flank Speed was like 4.5 or 4. And then since I got married, it's become less and less.
That's just what I was about to say. That comes with marriage.
Yeah.
Restrictions come with marriage. My wife is great. We've been married for 38 years now.
Oh, congratulations.
And, well, thank you. We have 5 wonderful children, and my wife has spent many a night in bed alone while I was out at the table playing war games on my own. There have been many nights when I didn't go to bed at all. That's the honest and good truth. She would be getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning as I was going to bed.
This sounds actually very familiar to me. My wife has to get up extra early in the morning for work, so she goes to bed before I do, and I'm up. Well, I'm not up as late as I used to be, but I'll be up until, say, like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'll be on the computer catching up on what's going on with, like, some gaming or maybe doing some blogging or some work for the podcast. But then I'll go and I'll, like, pull some of my Flames of War stuff and maybe start painting or be like, oh, well, maybe I need to reorganize my War at Sea over here. And, oh, it's time I should have a new fleet build because there's this new unit that's going to be coming out. And next thing I know, it's like 4:30 in the morning and I'm dragging myself to bed.
Yeah, I think that's the addiction in all of us that really like these war games. I know my kids were never interested in. In fact, I tried to get them to play some games, and they would never play with me. So I know a lot of guys I've talked to. In fact, Aaron Filter's son, first time I went up to meet with Aaron, it's about not quite a year ago, but I guess it was May of last year, April or May of last year, I met Aaron and his family. And one of his sons says, my dad's up sometimes all night. I thought, well, we need to know that's kind of the way it is with all the sword gamers. Your dad's not the only one that's like that.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh.
So I have a question for you. It's kind of a controversial one, at least in the Wizards of the Coast community. But what are your thoughts about Wizards of the Coast if they were to put out, I guess it's being called, you know, like a legacy set, like if they were to do that, where it's all reprints of things that are out of print now? For like the game's grown and the community is getting bigger, so a lot of people can't get the items. unless they do it on the secondary market. And it's very expensive. I know one online vendor, maybe it was an eBay auction, had a Jeremiah O'Brien starting at $22, which I think is kind of ridiculous. But what do you think about like a so-called legacy set if they were to ever come up with something like that?
Well, I have mixed emotions about that. As a businessman, I wouldn't like it, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But as a collector, I understand exactly where the customers are coming from because it's supply and demand. I've got Condors right now. I've got like four or five Condors left, and they're priced at $19.95. I can tell you I didn't pay anywhere near $19.95 for them.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't price them at $19.95, somebody else will swoop them up and resell them. In fact, I saw where one of my competitors had them for sale for $50.
Wow.
The Legacy, I think that if they were going to wrap up the Wartsy and have no more Wartsy coming out, and they wanted to come out with, you know, the all-time favorites, you know, the greatest hits,
mm-hmm.
I think it'd be a great idea. I can see where there would be a lot of interest in it. I think that you would probably have, the prices would probably be not as competitive as a regular set would be. But I can see that, you know, it would be a little higher, but it would be a lot less than what you're paying right now. Let me give you this as an example. The PBY Catalina
yes.
is still an expensive airplane to buy, even though they just came out with the Black Cat.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is the SAs on the cards. I think we're selling the Black Cats for like $5 or $6. I can't remember exactly what it is. But the Catalinas are still selling for like $15. Even though the PBYs came out as the Catalina, it's the card that makes the plane. So if you still want the PBY, the price is still up there.
I think your solution to that is actually perhaps one of the best thought out ones I've heard. I know some people who play have come, you know, out saying that they don't think they should ever do a legacy set, and others have said that obviously new players, they need stuff, and it would only be fair for them to do it. But in all of the discussion I've seen, or actually I guess arguments would be the better word to use, or more accurate anyway, people have said that they think they should come up with that, say, like as the set after the next one that they're going to come out with. And I've heard that Richard Baker has, I think, four or five more sets planned, so they would still have sets after that to come out, and it could be problematic. For myself, I'm one of those people who's not in favor of a legacy set, but the idea that you posit could be the perfect solution to it, because if people aren't going to be able to buy any more new sets anytime, you know, why not just let people who didn't have the stuff kind of get whatever they need?
That's true. I'll tell you what I'm really concerned about is there's a lot of young kids out there that have an interest in this game, but they can't afford this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to Neural Dream and some other folks about this, Sharp. And for your listeners, those are administrators on the 4U Mini, and Neural Dream is the guy who developed the forum. I've talked to him about ideas and how we might be able to help young kids buy some of this stuff without it costing them anything. For example, is there some kind of a service project that would be valuable to the 4U Mini that they could perform? I threw out there maybe they could do research on stuff in exchange for credits that they could use to, buy the miniatures in my store. Although it's, you know, nothing's really come of it. We're just not quite sure what to do with it or how to go about making these miniatures, which are some of them are very expensive, available to these kids who really want to own them without just giving them away. I mean, we don't know who they are or, you know, what their circumstances are. I found out in a couple of cases where there's one 4U Mini member that I had him do some scratch builds for me in exchange for some miniatures that I gave to him. So I was able to help him that way. But there's just the one that comes to mind right now, you've maybe seen the name out there, is Piper. He's a young guy. I think he's a freshman in high school up in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I have communicated a few times, and I just don't know exactly how you help these kids get these, you know, these aircraft carriers that are $20-25, and then the airplanes that go on them, because the parents aren't going to give them a bunch of money to go spend it on this stuff. and they're too young to work, so they can't get the money. So they're kind of at the mercy of, you know, their parents trying to, you know, help them out there to pick up the things that they're wanting to, you know, collect. If your listeners have any ideas on how we might be able to develop a way to help these kids acquire these miniatures at little or no cost, but still there's some sweat equity involved in it. I'm a big believer in sweat equity. I had my first job at the age of 8. I was pulling weeds around my house for the whole summer to get a baseball glove. That's what was my introduction to work. Let me tell you, that was work, but I'll never forget that. But that's kind of my approach to things. I don't want to give stuff away necessarily, but I want to help people try to get the stuff if there is a way to do it. That's a value. I want the value to be there is what I'm trying to say. I want them to feel like they really earned it, not just give it to them.
Well, I think people appreciate things if they actually work for it and then have that sense that they did something, they played a part to then earn whatever it is, whether it's
I do that.
Gaming or something else, whatever it is. I know just for me personally, things that I've worked the hardest for are things that I've appreciated the most. And that may not translate across the board to everything, but I think that plays into it somehow. If people have some sort of solution to this or any ideas, we'll definitely transfer them to you. And this is something that I think we'd like to be involved in some capacity, even if it's just putting the word out there or whatever it is. Part of the problem, I think, is the fact that it ends up being cheaper to purchase the items, not as singles, but as, you know, a prepackaged booster. But the problem with that is with the whole model of a collectibles game, you never know what you're going to get. So you could be paying your $15 for that booster in the hope that you're going to get whatever the carrier unit it is that you really need and then not get anything that you needed. But to be sure you're going to get what you want, the stuff's so expensive now, like you said, you could be paying $25, $30, or $40, $50 or whatever it is. To me, there's no need for it to be like that. I sold off a bunch of my old Axis and Allies land minis, and that paid a big portion of our honeymoon. And, I mean, it was nice that I could do that, but at the same time, it was kind of unsettling to me that, you know, just these little hunks of plastic, you know, had that much monetary value to them when it cost next to nothing to make them and to send them out and everything.
Well, yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying, but you got to be careful that, like I said earlier, back in August, maybe even in July, I can't remember when, I had a whole bunch of condors that I put out there at a really low price on the For You Mini for people to buy.
Mm-hmm.
And two guys came in and bought them all up. And I mean, one guy bought 20 condors. Now, you don't. I have 20 condors, okay, in my collection. But I'm probably the only guy in the whole world that has 20 condors.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I know where those condors went. So I decided that after that I wasn't going to be able to just go out there and put a really competitive low price on my stuff, because if I do that, somebody else is just going to pick it up and put it out there on eBay and make the money on it. So I just decided after that I wasn't going to do that anymore. I had the intention when I first joined the For You Mini to, you know, offer really, really competitive prices for the For You Mini members, but I had to change my thinking after that.
Well, you try to do something nice, and if you end up getting burned, so to speak, it makes you think twice about it. I think even with the fact that you had to, you know, change some of your pricing, you're still the cheapest or one of the cheapest online vendors for these products anywhere that I've ever seen. Not only that, but you provide a level of customer service that I think is unheard of nowadays. I think a lot of places are trying to put an emphasis on customer service, especially with the economy being bad, but they never seem to quite manage to get a hold on it. But I was, for those who have never been on our blog, if you go to wargamingforums.com, we have a whole review section, and one of the reviews on there is one that I had written for 12/7 Games, and awarded them our first ever Editor's Choice Award because I was just blown away by how stellar your customer service was. Like the whole package was there. So I think that's, even with this new, more competitive pricing, I think that still will continue to bring customers to you in addition to all the other things that you've done to kind of promote yourself.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you saying that, Jonathan. My prices, I've always tried to keep my prices at the lower level of what everybody else has out there. In other words, I do comparison price my stuff with three or four different vendors out there. And I always want to put myself at least as low as what they have. Sometimes they adjust their prices and mine might be out of line for a while. But I always try to bring mine back down in line with where their lowest price is. With regard to customer service, I have a very simple approach, and it's this. If I mess up, I want to treat my customer the way that I would want to be treated. That's it. If I make a mistake on something, I always want to do whatever it's going to take to make that customer happy. And I always start with the approach of, if it was me, what would I expect to make this right? And that's just the way that I've always operated. My dad was a big believer in treating people right. That doesn't mean that you don't have you can't always make everybody satisfied. But so far, I've been able to satisfy everybody in this business. But it's just kind of like the golden rule with me that you just got to think of the client first, the customer first, and as long as you're trying to do what's right for them, then everything will work out for you in the long run.
So a lot of what we've been talking about has been WRTC in historical gaming in general. And, of course, your store is focused on WRTC. But what sort of other products are you carrying now or are you hoping to carry in the near future?
There's been a lot of talk about the suspension of the WRTC and the Axis Allies miniatures. And so it's made me think a little bit about that. You know, what's my long-term plan here? As I said, I started out just with the intention of being a collector and then sell off the rest of the stuff. But I haven't finished my thoughts on this yet, but I am thinking about expanding to other lines. And just to let you know, it's my understanding that Wizards of the Coast will be coming out with an aircraft game similar to Wings of War.
Okay.
That should be released later this year. So I will definitely be involved in that. But I do have the Axis and Allies board games. I carry some Avalanche Press stuff. I've got some old collectible games. In fact, my very first game that I played was Battlecry. That's an old Milton Bradley Civil War game, and I've still got the game. And it was so beat up. I mean, I played that thing for probably 3 or 4 years. And, you know, the map, the board where the fold is and the map to, you know, pack it away, all the map is cracked and torn and stuff. And I even have one of the pieces, one of the Union cavalry units is missing. And I took an old chess pawn and put it in there as the replacement for that. But when I was buying stuff on eBay for my Axis and Allies WRTC collectibles, I started buying some of these old games. And right now I'm looking at, I haven't put these in my store yet, but I'm looking at 2, 4, 6, 8. I got 10 of the old dogfight games that Milton Bradley had that they came out with in, I guess it was like 64 or 65. And I've got 10 of the Battle Cry, and I've got, I'm looking at a half a dozen of the Broadside 1812 naval battle game that Milton Bradley had. And looks like a half a dozen of the Hit the Beach, the World War II Milton Bradley game of that series. So I've got a lot of old games that I've bought over the last few years. Plus, I've got a huge collection. I've probably got 150, 200 of the Avalon Hill board games that came out, like Panzer Leader and Advanced Squad Leader, all those old games that they came out in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, and I guess Hasbro bought Avalon Hill out in the 90s. So, but I've got, you know, an interest in, you know, buying and selling those. I think I mentioned Avalanche Press. I've got all the, I've got every one of the Axis and Allies board games except for the 50th anniversary one available. And we'll be in the new, we're going to be switching over to a new platform It was supposed to be, we were supposed to switch over in December, but the programmer got sick. And we've had some issues in getting the new store up and running. But when we have it available the next, well, hopefully by the end of February, it keeps getting pushed back on me here. But we should have all of our board games out there for sale. Right now I'm looking at the new version of Avalon Hills Battle Cry, which just came out in November. I've got a bunch of the Axis and Allies Europe 1940 and Pacific 1940. Fantasy Flight. We've got Fantasy Flight games, which makes Wings of War. But we've got the Battles of Napoleon. I've got probably four or five of those available. I got other stuff in here. I just can't see it all right now. But that's what we've got right now. We'll be expanding out into other stuff. I looked at some of the collectibles, some of the miniatures. I've decided against Flames of War for the time being, and also GHQ. We may get into those later on. We do have Memoir 44. We've got a lot of the Memoir 44 stuff. I happen to see that. We carry some of the Gale Force 9 stuff that goes with the Axis and Allies War at Sea stuff. Looking at my Wings of War, we've got a lot of Wings of War stuff. It's going to be a lot of it's out there now, but not all of it will be all out there when the new store opens up. Well, that's pretty much it, I think, for right now.
Have you ever considered any of the Litco Aerosystems tokens?
We are going to be distributing them. In fact, we've placed an order. It was supposed to be in last week, but it hasn't arrived yet. But we will be carrying Litco. In fact, I think it's probably going to, I'm hoping it's going to arrive tomorrow. Monday. I hope I can pick it up Monday.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, we're going to be carrying Litco. In fact, I got my distributor. My distributor did not carry Litco products. He's now carrying Litco products because of my insistence that we need to get those. One thing about Litco is some of their stuff, you can't get it all the time. You have to wait until they make a bunch of it up, and then you can get it. Mm-hmm. So not all their stuff is always readily available. So there could be periods of drought where you can't even get anything. I'm not even sure what part of my order wasn't able to be filled because they haven't made any for a while. They're going to make some more later on, but they don't have them available right now. And my distributor didn't tell me which items it was that was not filled on my order, so I can't tell you what it is. But we're getting the flames and the smoke and the smoke screens and some of that kind of stuff. Mines, those types of accessories for the war at sea.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever had or are you open to the idea of people, like some people, which I kind of alluded to earlier, they collect a bunch of the models or whatever that they happen to get, and then maybe they don't want the stuff or whatever, but have you ever been open to or would you be open to people selling their collections to you? I don't know if that's something you've given thought to. I've seen it online sometimes.
Are you talking about War at Sea collections and Axis and Allies?
Yeah, stuff like that.
Yes, we bought, in December, I bought three very large collections, over 2,000 miniatures.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, we do. In fact, a lot of the stuff that we have in our singles market is near-mint stuff that was owned by another player that decided to sell, and, we bought it, and we've put it back out there on the resale market in my store. So, sometimes, whenever you order something from me, if you go to our store and you click on the screen, it will tell you that it will be mint or near mint.
Mm-hmm.
The near mint is the stuff that we bought from another collector, but it's in perfect condition.
If someone wanted to sell their collection to you, like how would they go about doing that?
What they should do is give me a call. They can call me on the toll-free number, 888-787-9366, or they can email me at contactus@12-7-games.com. We can give them a quote. I've got two collections coming in now.
Okay.
We bought two last week.
I guess at this point, and maybe you should have mentioned this earlier, I had mentioned that you very kindly sponsor what we do here at the blog and the podcast, but maybe it would be interesting for the listeners if you could just kind of explain how we got to know each other, how we met, and how you ended up becoming involved with sponsoring us and what we do here.
Well, sure. I had my sponsorship in the For You Mini, and I guess you saw that and you place an order through our website, which is linked directly from the For You Mini into our store. I don't know if you went in that way or not, but you placed an order. I can't remember what was it. Was there a card or something? Was there something wrong with one of the cards?
I think one of the cards was damaged. There was something
right.
wrong with one of them.
Right. I think that's what it was, yes. There was a problem with, you know, like one of the cards was bent or something. And so you asked me to replace it, and I agreed to replace it, and I paid for your shipping back or something. I think I did.
Yeah, I believe you did.
Yeah, like I said, it's that's the way I would want to be treated. So that's why I did that. So I paid for you to ship the card back, and I sent you the replacement card, and then we started having discussions about, you know, what you were doing and the interest that I had in trying to get my name out there. And so I became a sponsor of your site. And I'm very happy that we've done that, because I know that the exposure has been good for us. And thank you very much for your assistance with that.
Oh, we're very appreciative of your sponsorship of us. It's allowed us to do quite a few things that we've always wanted to. One of them was we did that contest a while back, and the winner was able to choose a booster from a list of Warwick Sea or Access and Allies minis boosters from your store. It's interesting, as a result of that, we ended up befriending the winner of it, and he taught me how to play Warwick Sea online one night. I was up until, I think, 3 in the morning or something. we were playing Warwick Sea online, which was, it was a lot of fun, but we were able to do that. And for people who want to go to your store, of course, they can go to your website of 12-7-games.com, but we also have on our website a direct graphical link to your store, so people can just go ahead and click on that. And, you know, we keep stats and all sorts of stuff for everyone, partly because I just kind of, I'm not a numbers person, but I enjoy numbers. And also, it's only fair for you to know what's going on. But your graphic gets clicked quite a bit. I think it's been clicked over 10,000 times within the past 6 months or something like that.
That's a lot of hits.
Between that and visits to the blog, of course, you know, we mentioned you on the podcast and everything. I like to think that we're having some sort of impact, if nothing else, just to raise awareness of your store and that this option is out there. When I first got into collectible minis and collectible cards, I started with Magic the Gathering back in, I guess I was in maybe 5th grade or 6th grade. And of course, things have changed since then. But even more recently, I never would have ever thought of being able to buy them online until I just kind of stumbled across eBay one day. And then after that, I did all my stuff on there. And I didn't know that, you know, places would just sell only online. And maybe that's kind of naive of me, but my eyes had slowly opened. And it's difficult to pick, you know, who you want to do business with online. You never really know how to gauge what they like or anything. So I think it's nice to know that you have a person who's there, who's dedicated to doing what they do and who does a fantastic job with it. And a lot of it's word of mouth. As you said, I kind of asked around on the Forum Mini about it to see, you know, where I could get a good deal on some models from reliable, quality people. And they said, hey, you know, you should try one of our sponsors. And so I took a peek and picked you. And so hopefully our doing a little bit of word of mouth will get it out to our listeners and to the people who visit our blog. Not to toot our own horn, but we get something like 4,000 plus, you know, unique visits per month on the blog. And right now we're kind of getting a little bit of an explosion on our podcasts, where we're getting up to, I think, 20 to 30 downloads per episode, which isn't a ton, but I mean, for us, it's we're getting there and kind of just reaching out to people to spread the awareness of what's going on. Warwick Sea is one of my favorite games of all time. And so to be able to let people know what's going on with it and where they can get things for it, especially stuff that's out of print, I find very helpful. I wish some of that was there when I first started to get into the game.
Tell you what, your website has had a real increase in our business. I have a lot of business that comes from the New England area, and that has been a direct result of my exposure and advertising on your website. We started off, as I said, in April, and I think we started working together, when was it, like in July or something like that?
Yeah, shortly after.
Yeah, and our business from New England was virtually non-existent until after, you know, you and I started working together. So I attribute a significant portion of my New England business to advertising with you, and I really appreciate it.
It's good when any relationship that you have in life ends up being mutually beneficial. And plus, I think the best thing for me actually out of all this is just been able to get to know you. We've talked before on the phone and, of course, through emails and everything. And I just really enjoy talking to you.
Thank you.
Like, of course, you know what you do with your business and everything. But I just think you're a stand-up guy, and I just really enjoy chatting with you about stuff. I find that to be a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. I've always enjoyed our conversations, and I look forward to doing this again with you sometime.
I know we have to wrap up. You have a party to attend to this evening. Before we do, I would just like to have you have a chance to, one, restate how people can contact you, but also to see if you had any questions or comments or things that you'd like to discuss.
Just that, you know, I really appreciate everyone's business. It's this is something that I always thought that I would like to do once I retire, but I'm not really retired. I do have staff that comes in and helps me during the week, but it's mostly family, and I have one other person that comes in and helps out outside of my family. If they would like to contact us, if they can't reach me, just leave me a voicemail. I'll be glad to call them back, and the number is 888-787-9366. Or you can go to contact us at 12-7-games.com, and I respond. I had a gentleman send me an email earlier. I guess it was Wednesday or Thursday. He says, "Don't you ever sleep?" And yes, I do sleep, but I have a very unusual sleeping pattern where I'll sleep 2 to 3, maybe 4 hours at a time, and I'll sleep maybe 4 to 6 hours in a night. I've been that way my entire life. I don't know why. But I have the laptop next to my bed, and I'm constantly, when I wake up in the middle of the night, you know, going to my laptop and see if there's any messages, because this is an international business. We have customers all over the world, and I get orders coming in at 3, 4 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. So don't be surprised if you place an order and you get an email from me at 3 o'clock in the morning. Because I do a lot of my emailing at that time of the day, or the night, I should say.
I'm a bit of a night owl, and so I do most of my online business late at night. And I was very surprised the first time I placed an order with you. It was like midnight or 1 in the morning, and not even half an hour later, I got a response from you saying that the stuff was getting ready and you would be shipping it out soon. And it made me wonder what you were doing up to in business at that time. But
you know, I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't have all this stuff right here at my house. But it makes it a lot easier for me, more convenient. But it also improves the service that I can provide to my customers. It really turns stuff around very, very quickly. For example, most businesses are closed on Saturdays. I had five orders this morning.
Oh, wow.
In between 3 o'clock in the morning and 10 o'clock this morning. I was able to come down here, get them all together. I did four of them, and I got the four out, put them in the mailbox before the mail got here, and I came back in. There was a fifth one, so I hurried up and did that when I ran out to the mailbox, and all five of them went out today. So all the orders that came in this morning are out, and they shipped, and they'll probably have them Monday or Tuesday.
I think that's amazing.
Well, I don't like stuff sitting around. That's you know, I like to stay ahead of the curve. If I let stuff go, then I get a little frustrated, and I don't like being like that. So I like to stay on top of things and keep things flowing smoothly that way.
Well, that sounds good. Did you have any questions or anything that you wanted to ask us about or talk about?
You know what? I'm not really quite sure what to ask, to be honest with you, Jonathan. The only thing I would ask is if your listeners have any ideas on how we might be able to develop ways to help these young players acquire, you know, these collectible game pieces without them having to spend a lot of money. If there is some kind of I didn't know if there was a research service, or maybe somebody else who got a different idea on how we might be able to help these kids become involved, more involved in this hobby. I love this hobby. It's just been a lifetime passion for me. And if there's any way that I can help young people become involved in, I want to do it. I just wish I had the ideas to find a solution to help these kids get these miniatures that they would like to have, that I would like for them to have. I'm just not quite sure how to do it short of giving them away, and I don't want to do that.
Well, I think we just found our next contest. So if you're listening and you have an idea and you think it would be a good idea to come up and help out these young people who want to get into the game and just can't afford it, please send your submissions to us. You know, we'll pick whatever one or ones that we think is best, and then whoever we pick will end up winning some sort of prize package. I don't know what just yet what we'll give as a prize package. We'll throw in, you know, one of our T-shirts, of course, plus whatever else we come up with. But you can send that to us at our email address of cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Leave it as a comment on our blog, wargamingforums.com, or you can go ahead on Facebook and you can find us and just leave a message on there, and we'll take them any one of those ways and get thinking, people.
That's great. I really look forward to that, and there will be at least a booster involved, so let's see what we get. I look forward to this.
That sounds fantastic. We'll add that into the basket, so to speak, and hopefully everyone will get their thinking hats on, and we'll come up with something good and be able to help these people.
That'd be great. Well, thanks a lot, Jonathan. I really appreciate it. It's been fun. The hour has flown by here. I really appreciate this, and hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Look forward to having you back on down the road, and maybe you'll have more interesting things and new stuff coming out on your storefront. Once again, I just want to thank you, Bill. This is Bill Detmer, CEO and owner of 127games.com. They sell all sorts of wonderful historical gaming products, but primarily War at Sea. And if you don't play at War at Sea, you really should. It's worth your time. So thank you, Bill, for being a guest with us today.
Thanks a lot, Jonathan. Talk to you soon.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now, the New England Podcasting Guide to New England Accents. The Boston Accent. Unusual. Wicked Weird. Idea. Idea. Harvard Yard. Harvard Yard. Radio. Podcast. Stop by NewEnglandPodcasting.com today and sample some of the finest podcasts in the world. New England Podcasting is wicked good.
The CWF Gamecast is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Axis and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com. Look for the CWF Gamecast online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can learn more about this episode by visiting the show notes on our blog. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.